Welcome back to Radio Row in New Orleans, ahead of Super Bowl 59. Grant and Danny with you on the fan. Danny is back in our Half Street studios. I'm out here in the wildness that is Radio Row. It's now Media Row, I guess. No such thing as Radio Row. But man, is it nuts. I will say, Danny, there's one person today that has drawn a bigger crowd than Jaden Daniels at this activation where everybody gathers around. And it's right now, and it's Stephen A. Smith, believe it or not.
How about it?
That's the only person who's drawn a bigger crowd than Jaden Daniels today that we've seen.
Where's he at?
Stephen A. Smith's over there right now doing whatever Stephen A. Smith does. And people are enjoying
it. He's just Stephen A. Smith and up to 11.
Yes, he is. The voice you just heard is Daryl Moose Johnston, who's joining us on Grant and Danny. Thrilled to have him back on the program. Last time I talked to you, I believe, Moose, you were in D.C., getting ready for the kickoff of the United Football League season. Of course, one of the gentlemen who runs the United Football League. And it was a great year for the D.C. Defenders, XFL, merging with the USFL and the UFL. And things went very well, I thought, for the fan base. And the league is back and ready for more.
Yeah, it was a crazy year last year. I think we were, what is the saying? We were drinking from the fire hose while we built the airplane. On the football side, I think we were very, very happy with the product. The season was great. I think one of the areas, because the cadence was so challenging, once the merger came together, we weren't officially a league until January 12th. And that wasn't too long before we were kicking off that we focused all of our energies into the football side of everything. And this year, with a normal offseason and a normal cadence, we were able to kind of get to the business side and really take a look at, you know, exactly what you're looking at right now. I mean, that's the new website. It was just upgraded a couple of days ago. We announced our headquarters, which is a huge, huge component of what we're doing and trying to make the day-to-day experience for our players to be a little bit more manageable. We're a little bit nomadic in the things we ask them to do. So we kind of identified a few areas this year that we wanted to get better at. We'll continue to do that year after year. But hats off to everybody in year one getting that league up and running, and now year two really kind of coming behind that with some really great additions on the business side of the league and really getting that component into shape.
What are the metrics of success for you this year, just in terms of that part that you're talking about, Daryl? Whether it's the business side of it, it's easy for, you know, media folks to say, well, these are the TV numbers and call balls and strikes on that. But for you, as someone who's, you know, committed to this thing growing, what are metrics for success that you guys are judging against?
Outwardly, it would be the competitiveness of the football. How many of our guys get an opportunity, you know, to chase that NFL dream when our season ends and they move towards the NFL season. Inwardly, us generating more revenue. The ability to increase attendance across all eight markets, I think, is something that we would like to see change this year. And being able to have, you know, more of a little bit of a footprint in each of our home markets with our business people is hopefully going to help us there. How do we connect in a hub model with our players and our staffs back into the home market on a consistent basis where we're generating interest? How are we bringing attention, you know, to what we're doing in these home markets? So there's a lot of things inwardly that we're looking at that should have an impact on both the revenue component and the attendance component. But the most important thing will always be the football. You know, making sure that the football is extremely competitive. We're innovative. We press the envelope on technology. We looked at everything we did last year, and when we get into the rule change component, I think the big thing, you know, that we talked about is going back to the kickoff that the XFL started, that the NFL embraced last year. I really thought that was going to be a one and done. I thought that as a trial year, that kickoff would not be accepted by NFL fans.
Yeah, I think you last year on Radio Row, you suggested that.
Yeah.
You were not a big fan of it, right?
No, I'm not. I'm still not. I still like the traditional kickoff, but I also have to be smart for our players. And if the NFL is going to embrace this kickoff moving forward, then it doesn't make sense for us to have our guys doing something that's not something they're going to be doing at the NFL level. So it made sense for us to do that. And then after we made that decision, we hear the information coming out of the NFL that the lowest concussion rate that they've had, you know, in a season since they started tracking it in 2016. And with the big change being the kickoff, you would think that that played a huge role in that. So it makes sense from a health and safety standpoint. It makes sense in a transitional standpoint for our players. So, you know, the one thing that you'll see this year is going to be, you know, our kickoff going back to what it was in the UFL and very similar to what they're doing in the NFL. But we've left that up. That's kind of the structure. Now we got to do finalize all the details with that. So we've asked, you know, Mike Pereira and Dean Blandino, you know, put your spin on this. So we keep the return rate where we were last year. That's the one thing we do want to make sure we do is, okay, if we're going to go this direction, the one thing that we do want to make sure we do is continue to have that return rate that we've had, you know, in the league using the traditional kickoffs.
Daryl Johnston is with us. The UFL getting ready to come back later this year, I believe, right? It's end of March?
End of March, March 28th, Friday night, yeah.
So can you take us inside, whatever you can tell us about the scheduling? And at one point in time, I think you guys started right after the XFL, before you were together, which was still February. End of March now is almost kind of even with baseball kicking off. What's the logic on the schedule? Or is it about venues? Or I have no idea what I don't know.
It's one of those things, right? Until you get into the managerial side, you know, you don't really know the logistics of getting a team to travel or getting a league to travel, you know, setting up all the practices during the course of the week. And then the other thing with scheduling is the venue component. And it's very challenging. You know, we've got a couple of venues that are tied into MLS and some of the soccer
Audi's
components.
One of them in D.C.
Yeah, Audi's one of them in D.C. Now you've got, you know, the World Cup coming to North America next year, and that's going to have an impact on some of the venues there. You know, the Alamo Dome in San Antonio has a traditional cadence with events that you're always trying to work around, and they get the NCAA Final Four this year. So to watch our people work through the scheduling component with all the different venues across the league and come up with our schedule is one of the more challenging things that you get to watch. When people get a little bit frustrated with the schedule, you know, we do want to separate ourselves a little bit from the NFL in that post-Super Bowl. If we talk about more football in the spring and we miss football, well, let's give them an opportunity to miss football. So we've got to create a gap. And then the question is, what is the best gap? And I think, you know, we want to get to a point where we are traditional. And it was kind of frustrating for me. You know, the NFL used to kick off Labor Day weekend, right? It was always Labor Day weekend that there was an NFL game, you know, kind of leading into that, end of August, beginning of September. And now they've kind of moved off of Labor Day weekend because, you know, ratings were down. They were always low on Labor Day weekend, and they were always high on Christmas weekend. So, if you know, let's extend the season in and push through the Christmas holiday because we get more viewership on Christmas weekend than we do on Labor Day weekend. And so we're looking at lots of things like that. You know, what is the best slot for us to be in based on what the landscape is out there with other sporting options? And then also, how does that match against our venue availability, you know, to try and create a consistent kickoff date?
My favorite thing, Moose, is a longtime advocate of these spring leagues and a big fan now of the UFL. I go to all the Defenders games. When I'm watching any of these games at home, the transparency during reviews, we've talked about this in the past, I don't think the NFL will ever get where you guys are or is allowed to or would want to. I think it's stunning and it's amazing, though. And for people listening at home that don't know, I mean, we hear the interaction of the ref and Blandino in the booth, wherever he is, and you can hear them talking about the spot and is it caught. I guess, number one, do you think there's ever going to be a time where that would even work at the NFL level from a broadcast standpoint? But also, is that as popular with your audience as I would assume it is? I mean,
to me,
that's the best content going in football broadcast right now.
Yeah. It's been a tough year for the NFL, and it kind of peaked in the AFC Championship game. You know, to the point where the NFL has to come out and make statements that we're not fixing the games for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Right, yes.
You know, you got kind of a problem here. It's probably not as simple as we make it out to be. And we've got four matchups during the course of the week, and they're going to have 16. You know, how do you dedicate one person there that you trust? You got to have 16 Mike Pereiras and Dean Blandinos, you know, to really get this done. I mean, you got to be, you know, in a deep knowledge of the rule book. And that NFL rule book is cumbersome. You know, ours is not nearly as challenging. We try to keep it as simple as we can, which allows us, you know, to be able to do that. But I agree with you. And I hear it from a lot of fans, too, because they just want to know the why. I may not agree with it, but if I hear the why, I'm like, I still don't agree with it, but you know, at least I know what they were thinking. I mean, this one kind of comes out, and it's like, you see things, and if you don't have somebody tell you that, you know, here's why that doesn't work. Is it a shot down the line? It's not truly down the round. There's a little bit of an angle that gives you that, even if you were doing something like that. But I think the NFL could benefit from it. Why don't they take video on the sideline? That's another one. Our guys are watching video on the sideline. The NCAA took it to their bowl games last year. I don't know what they did this year. I don't know if they implemented it all the way across. I would doubt they did it across the entire NCAA landscape.
To clarify, you're talking about like watching the iPad.
We're watching iPads on the sideline.
Why isn't that a thing?
Still watching. You know, they've got something on the Microsoft tablet, the Surface that they say is similar. And I've seen them where they're kind of splicing the cutups, just like you would get. You would be handed stills, and you would have to put them together. I think they're still coming across
as stills, right?
And you're trying to piece it together. Just let me see where the safety came from. I just want to see where he started and where he ended up. And our quarterbacks are the ones that really talk about it. They're like, listen, you know, I'm watching it on the sideline the whole time. So then when I watch it together with the coach on Monday for the first time, I'm already way down the road on what I remember from the game. So then it's, you know, I feel like I'm way ahead during the course of the prep week. So I think that's another area where the NFL just allow the video to come down onto the sideline.
Darryl Moose Johnston with us here on G&D. Speaking of the NFL, big one this weekend, Super Bowl matchup. Three-peat Kansas City or, you know, kind of this rebuilt on the fly Philadelphia Eagles team. They were in this and won it a handful of years ago. It's almost a totally different roster since then now. They were here a couple seasons ago, toe-to-toe with the same Kansas City team. How do you see it going?
I'm not very good at predicting games, but I think this is probably selfish. I have a strong feeling for Philadelphia by 10, and it's probably because I don't want Patrick Mahomes to have the ball in his hand at the end of the game to beat the Eagles and win three Super Bowls in a row, which kind of takes away from our 3 and 4 years. So there's a lot of selfishness in my prediction. I think it's going to be hard for Kansas City to stop Saquon. They haven't had a running back rush for over 100 yards against them all season. Lamar went for 122 in week one, but that's a quarterback. The highest number for a running back was 88 by Joe Mixon in the divisional round. So they haven't really, you know, they stopped Derrick Henry, but Lamar Jackson hurt him. If they try to stop Saquon that way, can Jalen hurt them? And it'll be interesting to see, but I think that's going to be one of the key points to watch is that Philadelphia offensive line versus the Kansas City defensive front. I don't think Steve Spagnuolo gets enough credit. Mm-hmm. You know, here's a guy that over the last 2 years has the number one scoring defense in the NFL. It's not about Patrick Mahomes and explosive plays down the field anymore. It's about Patrick Mahomes minimizing his mistakes, allowing the defense to control and dictate to the opponent, and then being very advantageous when the situations present themselves. And he's learned to function. I think it's one of the cool things comparing him to Tom Brady. Tom Brady won with a number of different style rosters, and Patrick Mahomes has done that throughout his career at an early age, and that's a credit to him. I think one of the biggest things in this game is going to be both of these teams they're 1-2 in 10-plus play possessions. So 10-plus plays without points, 10-plus play scoring drives. Philadelphia is number 2 in both of those categories. Kansas City is number 1 in both of those categories. So there's going to be a premium on the possession. And how do you adjust your coaching style knowing that going into the game? I mean, we go back to Sean Payton, right? I got to steal a possession against the Colts, so he does the onside kick. Do we see some different things from Nick Sirianni or Andy Reid because they understand this could be a game where I only get 7 possessions the entire game? And how do I make sure I maximize those possessions?
I'm looking, you guys, back-to-back, and then had a chance to go back-to-back-to-back. The closest team prior to the Chiefs, frankly, in terms of getting to the NFC Championship game against San Francisco, and you outscored them over the final three quarters. Slow start, or else who knows.
21-0 after 6 minutes.
Was it really 6 minutes? Oh,
6 minutes.
Gosh. Goodness. So it was one of those things where it was like, brutal start, doomed you, but the rest of the game, you played your game.
Yeah, we could never get inside 10 points. We could never get into a single-digit lead. We got close. If you remember, there was a very suspect no pass interference call on Deion Sanders inside the 10-yard line that would have got it to 7, I think, and the ref didn't call it.
Hmm.
So
not that you remember that.
Not that I remember that.
Exactly.
Somebody
that stuck
reminded
with you at all?
Me of that earlier today.
Before I let you go here, you've been gracious with your time. We appreciate you. Be remiss if we didn't ask you about Washington is back, it feels
like. Oh, my
gosh. In a big way. that rivalry with the Cowboys has just kind of been dead and dormant. And now feels like there's a little something cooking between Washington and Philly after they played in the NFC title game. But my question is, do you think it's possible with player movement the way that it exists now? And I don't know, it's not Redskins, Cowboys, right? Can that rivalry ever be special again, or is that time passed?
It'll always be a rivalry. It's just, you know, how much of a rivalry is it? For it to truly be a rivalry, there has to be high stakes in the games that are played. It can't just be divisional games during the course of the season. The Cowboy-Redskin rivalry was generated by meaningful games. You know, playing in NFC championship games, playing in playoff games. Those are the meaningful games. That's why when we played, a lot of us will consider Philadelphia our rival, more so than Washington, because we had a ton of meaningful games against Philadelphia. We never played Washington in the playoffs, but we played Philadelphia multiple times in the playoffs. So that they became meaningful games. They were the last team we beat in the NFC East as we started to emerge. So we already had a little bit of angst against Philadelphia. Then it just takes one time playing at the Vet,
yeah,
and then you become a forged anti-Philadelphia right. Eagle player.
We know about that. So,
you can hit to the ground on that turf once.
I'm so excited for the NFC East. I miss the days. I mean, back in the early 90s when it was Giants running, we were up and coming. Philadelphia was dominant. I mean, we had you know, Washington was good. I mean, we had four teams, you know, that were really, really tough. We beat each other up during the course of the regular season, but we were so battle-tested going into the playoffs, and we didn't blink after playing against some of those divisional games. I mean, it was great. It was awesome. And so, you know, with Washington back, with Philly back, the Giants and the Cowboys, we got to get it figured out and get this NFC East division back. It's so cool, right? Everybody, the NFC North, look at this, you know, the best records in the NFL, and then it's the NFC East in the championship game.
Love it. Well, I'd like it more if the championship game would have gone different, but I digress. You get it. Moose, thank you for the time.
And thank you, Moose.
Hey, whenever you want to talk UFL this spring, you know where to find
thank
us.
Thank you, Grant.
We appreciate you. There's Moose Johnston with us on Radio Row in New Orleans.
Media Row,
media, that's true. There's no such thing as Radio Row in 2025.
Media Mob.
Cynthia Freeland, who handles a lot of the analytics over at NFL Media, is going to stop by as we continue. Also, Myles Garrett said today he is interested in playing with Jaden Daniels. He is pushing this trade narrative. Let's get into that next on The Fan. I've got a fun game I want to play with Danny, but it's going to have to wait, I guess, because Myles Garrett apparently is making it known that he would like to play in Washington with Jaden Daniels. That seems like it should take precedent. We're the cool team, and Washington has the cool quarterback that people want to play with. So Garrett's been doing interviews all day. I was saying this when he walked by. He showed up on Radio Row, and everyone just started running after him and behind him because you demand a trade yesterday, and then you show up on Radio Row in the span of 24 hours. You're probably going to be a commodity.
Yeah, people, and it's smart on his part, by the way. So I think it was Albert Breer who joined us earlier and said, behind the scenes, it wasn't going anywhere, right? Where he did what you're supposed to do, which is keep that sort of stuff private and not, you know, air your business. Well, now the court of public pressure is ongoing, right? Like, he got his word out. It wasn't going anywhere with them. So he said, okay, fine, watch this. I have my own outlets. And wouldn't you know it, part of a coordinated strategy, I'm sure, posts up now on Media Rows, making the rounds on some of the big sillies, and again getting the word out. So it's and he's mentioned Washington in a couple of these interviews, man.
Yes, he has. So let's listen to what he said exactly. He was on with Mina Kimes. Let's start with that, and the idea of a trade and the Commanders and Jaden Daniels came up. Here it was.
But what about like a youngster like Jaden Daniels, like an up and coming star? Yeah, yeah. Could that appeal to you at all?
Absolutely. I mean, he looked great. I mean, he looked great when we played him, but he really showed his behind when he was in the playoffs. And, you know, he's really done it and been very composed, you know, throughout the entire season. He can only continue to flourish, and he, you know, keeps his head down and continues to work.
What do you think?
Would you be interested? Yes, I would. You know what I mean? Like, it's there.
I mean, we like to play thing or not a thing. He said yesterday publicly that he wants to be traded. I don't know. If you go through 10 teams and you go, would you want to play with this guy? He might say yes to like 9 or 10 different guys, right?
Well, sure. But I think there's a difference between I just want to win or I'm open to any opportunity or whatever versus what about someone like Jaden Daniels? Absolutely. Do you know what I mean? Like, that to me is a little bit more telling. Now, that's if Washington isn't included at all and doesn't offer anything in trade. It's not like he's going to refuse to show up to Detroit or somewhere else. But the fact that it was a Daniels-specific question and he went in and said, yes, absolutely, Jaden Daniels makes that place really appealing, I think that's telling, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I want to hear this next answer because this was on SI. I want to hear exactly what he had to say about Daniels in Washington. Because to me, yes, I think both things can be true. I'm sure he's impressed by Daniels. I'm sure he wants to play with him. I'm not trying to poo-poo that or pour cold water on it. But it also kind of feels a little bit like I want to be traded. Beggars can't be choosers.
Yeah, is that not Cleveland? Yeah, so I'm in.
I'll go play for. Yeah, is that the Browns you're talking about? Then I'm happy to go there. This was the SI question from the interview with Garrett.
Would you like to go to the Commanders? Thought about it. Have you thought about the squads that you want to play for?
They need a pass rusher. I think that's something that they dearly miss down there in the playoffs and some of their big games. And I feel like I can fill that role, but you know that's a role that you know multiple teams need. And
yeah.
I feel like I'm not only a pass rusher, but I think I'm the best defensive player in the game. And 100%. I feel like that's invaluable in itself.
See, I'm going to slam my gavel here and say the lead, the headline, what's going to come out is, and I even did the tease this way because that's the headline I saw, like Myles Garrett's making the case that he would love to be a Commander. I think Myles Garrett's just following up yesterday's I want to be traded, and people are asking him about the Commanders, and he's like, sure, I'd do that. That sounds fun. It's not quite what I wanted to hear something that I'm not hearing when I heard this audio with you guys for the first time right now.
So two things. One, I think, I don't know if you could tell, was there music in the background of that clip?
The
second
bit.
Thing, thank you. I don't know. I don't get it. So I'd like to hear the words. Second of all, I don't think it's a 10 out of 10 slam dunk that he's like agitating and asking for a trade to Washington. But I also think maybe it's a slightly higher number than you do, right? Where it clearly shows that he's thought about the organization, thought about the team, thought about what they needed, saw the game, has seen Jaden Daniels. So it's not just like, you know, I'm open to it. You know, I don't want to get into specifics. There's off ramps that aren't. Like, again, it's not to say that if Washington doesn't offer him, he's not going somewhere. He wants out of Cleveland. That's the number one headline there. That's the thing that's most tantamount to him. But I do think he's noticed Washington, and maybe he noticed us noticing him. Notice Washington. Does that make sense? Like, I think he'd be very open to that idea. Not necessarily saying doing an NBA star thing, trade me to Washington now. But hey, guys, come get me.
He's Danny. I'm Grant. You're listening to The Fan. All right, now we do have time to play the game I want to play.
Oh, good.
So without further ado, Toby, if you wouldn't mind hitting a little game show music, this is going to be difficult. I'm going to tell you in advance.
Uh-oh.
Danny's going to get very frustrated.
Oh, man.
And inevitably, I think Danny is going to need some help from Clary and from Toby. Now, the problem is I don't think Clary's going to be able to help him at all. And I don't really know enough about Toby in this regard to know if he's going to be able to help you at all, but I'd assume he's not going to be able to. So if he goes really badly and nobody can get anything, then we're just going to have to move on. Are you ready to play the game, Danny?
No.
This is a fun game. We've played it many times on the show.
Oh, no.
While walking in New Orleans last night, I bumped into a pretty famous actor, I would say.
Okay.
Just bumped into him.
All right.
Who was it? A famous actor in New Orleans. Of course, it's Super Bowl week, so a lot of people are here.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know why this guy's here. It didn't make any sense to me offhand. But it was immediately recognizable as someone I've seen in a lot of things.
And you spoke to him, or you just saw him?
I did not. I saw. It was like when I say I bumped into him, like I walked by him, and he was with three people. And if I would have stopped him to say, I've seen you in movies, that would have been a weird thing.
Okay.
So I just thought it was cool that I had like a celebrity sighting.
All right. Okay. Let's do. Are we asking any questions or are we just firing guesses?
I'll tell you one more thing. He had just gotten done eating his dinner at Brennan's in New Orleans.
Oh.
And as I was going into Brennan's, he was coming out of Brennan's.
I'll start the bidding with Mark Wahlberg.
It's a good guess, but the answer is no. I think yes or no questions are probably going to be more helpful than just guesses, but do you.
Okay. I'm gonna go with a couple more guesses, then I'll start narrowing it down a little bit, just to see if I can do this with
Wildstyle. That'd be hilarious.
Tom Hanks.
No.
Morgan
Freeman.
Less
A-list. Like, that's A-list. This guy's not on that
lower level. This is lower down. Okay,
so,
lower down.
So let me change A-list, because that's definitely probably not fair. If this is your A-list, like all the best guys at the Oscars, this guy is, by those standards, he's probably like B-minus C-list.
Oh, all right. Okay, so I had a couple others like in the Bradley Cooper vein because he's an Eagles fan. I was going to go Cooper next, but it's lower than
that.
Okay,
I'm going to go D-list.
D-list.
Lower than Bradley Cooper.
Okay, lower than Bradley Cooper. All right, so now I got to start asking yes or no questions. Is this person over 60?
No.
Is this person over 50?
No.
Over 40?
Yes.
Okay, so they're in their 40s. All right, this person's in their 40s. So the only actors I can think of are, like, famous. Jonah Hill.
No.
Is this a comedic actor?
Yes.
Is this person portly?
No.
Is this a thin person?
Yes.
Are they known for being in shape, or they just happen to be thin and in their 40s? Does that make sense?
The second one. I would say fit more than thin.
Fit more than thin. In their 40s, and it's a D-list actor? Yeah.
Well, it's lower than some of the ones you were doing earlier.
Okay. I don't know. Oh, man. D-list. Like, but also, I'm trying to figure out what you think of as D-list, because you haven't seen, like, certain movies or don't care, but you, I don't know.
This guy has done some stand-up. He has acted.
You saw T.J. Miller.
No. Bigger than him over the last several years.
Jay Baruchel.
No, I would say bigger than him.
Bigger than that guy. All right. In shape. In shape in their 40s.
This guy has been a lead in a movie, in a comedy movie in the theaters in the last 10 years.
There haven't been any comedy movies in the theaters in the last 10 years.
Starred with Zac Efron in this movie.
The Rock?
No.
Starred with Zac Efron. Seth Rogen?
No. It was this guy, Efron, Aubrey Plaza, and Anna Kendrick were the stars of the movie.
Oh, it was the Something and Something Get Wedding Dates. That was the movie you're talking about. Now, who starred opposite Zac Efron in... Pete and Stacy and Jim and Joey Need Wedding Dates, or whatever the hell the thing's called.
Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates.
That's the one. Dave Franco.
No, guy.
James Franco.
Wrong. No.
I don't know who started.
I thought you loved this guy.
Does Ryan know
it? No, I
can't do this. I hate these things so much. It's not fun. I can't imagine this is enjoyable for anybody.
I've actually been told that I look like this guy. He's got like a kind of a high-pitched voice a little bit, and I'm going to be quite honest. This is just me. A little bit of an annoying actor. I think he's a little overrated.
Oh.
That's just me. I can't think of him right now. I can't think of the name, but I can tell you he's like kind of spiky hair, brown hair.
You know, Ryan raised his hand to do this. You know that? He like waved at me like, I got it.
I can picture the face. I know exactly what you are talking about, Grant. I know exactly what he is. Like spiky brunette hair. He's a little pale, kind of fit-ish. I know who you're talking about, but I can't think of the name.
Oh, is this dude also in Pitch Perfect?
He is.
Yes. Adam Devine.
See,
Adam
I knew
Devine
it.
Adam is Devine. Correct. By the way, some people got it on the 106.7 The Fan YouTube chat.
Oh, good job, guys.
You guys did. Adam Devine is the answer. Bumped into him last night. My celebrity sighting late night in New Orleans last evening. He's married to, because I was like looking him up last night. I was like, let's get some Adam Devine.
Get some Adam Devine intel.
He's married to a woman named Chloe Bridges. I don't know if you're familiar with her work.
Nope.
Awesome actress. Really, really good actress.
Huh.
Yeah.
Chloe Bridges.
Very good actress.
Chloe Bridges.
You want to look up her work.
Look up her acting.
Yes. She's good at
acting. Oh, she's acted in... Oh, look at these pictures of her acting. They look really good.
She's a good actress.
Yep.
What she does is act.
I've never seen this person before in my life. That is fascinating.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. What about Bobby Wagner coming back in 2025? What kind of priority should that be for Washington? We'll get into that next on the Fan. At the top of the hour, 15 minutes from now, Mitch Holtis, who is the voice of the Kansas City Chiefs, from the director that gave you Touchdown, Kansas City, and his new one, Danny, which I'm sure people that hate the Chiefs hate. I love this, though. I just think it's so good. He's like, you don't have to like the Chiefs. You don't have to respect the Chiefs, but you will deal with the Chiefs at the end of their game.
It's like a wrestling promo, basically.
Oh, it's so good. He's like, you will have to deal with the Kansas City Chiefs. So we'll talk to him about that coming up at 6 o'clock, right at the top of the hour. He just gets to call the Super Bowl every year, man. Not a bad gig.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, he looks up the preseason, you know, once the schedule comes out, then he's like, okay, where's the Super Bowl this year? Let me get my hotel. Let me just go ahead and book all that stuff in advance. I'll get a good rate with the advance.
Just like most of you have a primary doctor that you lean on, it's good to also have a trusted attorney in your corner. The exclusive sponsor of our show, the law firm Kenori & Murad, can guide you when you need help the most. Whether you're seeking guardianship or an elderly family member, navigating through the probate process for a loved one who recently passed away, or you're trying to set up an estate planning document for your child's future, the attorneys at Kenori & Murad are always there for you. Schedule a free consultation with them today. KMLawyers.com. Be sure to tell them we sent you. That's KMLawyers.com. Wizards have made two trades today. Kyle Kuzma on the move to the Milwaukee Bucks. Washington getting Chris Middleton, a pick swap, and a rookie guard back in that deal. And they also, while we were on the air within the last hour, Danny, pulled off a deal, which was much expected, for Jonas Valanciunas as well. So this front office, as they continue to rebuild this thing from the ground up and detonate this roster, making moves with the veterans that have any kind of interest from around the league, it was a no-brainer that if you weren't bolted down, you were on the move.
Yeah, and a lot of these guys, sort of like national style, right, where you buy someone off the bargain heap, the scrap heap, whatever, you give them some minutes or some playing time, as the case may be, and you hope to spin them for future assets. They did that with Valanciunas right there. So there are a couple other guys that, you know, I'm watching. I'll be fascinated to see what they do with Jordan Poole. I've heard no buzz about him moving, but to me, that's the guy that could fetch them the most potentially to a contender. Is someone to come off the bench, kind of a modern day Lou Williams, good six man, good score with second units, can handle the ball a little bit, and play in some small ball lineups to get you some offense. So I'll be fascinated to see what they do there. But, Valanciunas was basically signed to be traded. So, future assets, that's the name of the game.
We were talking earlier about Myles Garrett potentially wanting to play for Washington. And while, after hearing the audio, I'm going to pour a little cold water on the idea that he's seeking out the Commanders, right, it is just nice to think about the fact that one of the best players in the NFL wants out of his organization and would rather play for the Commanders, which is going to be happening more and more and more. Every single guest we've had that comes by, we put the headsets down after the interviews. They talk about, glowingly, not just Daniels or Quinn, who's loved by everybody here in the media that has dealt with him at any point, but just the operation and the team. Peters has nothing but allies all over this building. Like, they are just the club that everybody likes right now, and Myles Garrett is no different. But the question I've got is, if they acquire Garrett or whichever players they sign and trade for, is Bobby Wagner still going to be running this locker room? Danny, we'll be looking into some of the free agents to be on this show in the days ahead. Wagner's one of the more interesting cases to me because of how important he was in the locker room, the fact that even though his production did wane, he went from 183 tackles last year to 132 this year. That's a massive drop-off. But it was 142 seasons ago with the Rams. What we saw was a little less foot speed maybe laterally, but at 34 years old, 10th Pro Bowl, sixth time being an All-Pro on the first or second team. Now he is, matter of fact, he's a six-time first teamer. So he's been an All-Pro on the first or second team every single year since 2014. But I think Wagner's a guy that if the price is right, you got to try to bring back. I just wonder if you keep him and he's, you know, into his age 35 season and he hits that wall, what's behind him? It's hard to layer unless they think McGee could be ready in his second season. If you're spending that kind of money on your starter, it's hard to layer behind Wagner someone who allows you to not really feel like you have a huge drop-off.
The price, and this is just, you know, I hate that it comes down to this, but it's a huge factor here. The price has to be right. So, in other words, as Adam Peters told us when we talked to him, and also by his actions, you can't fix everything in 1 year. You can't have nothing but blue-chip players around at every spot. I mean, Philadelphia is the closest you've got in this league, and even still they have places where I'm sure they'd like to upgrade. So you kind of kick that problem down the road by a year or two with a guy towards the end of his career, as Wagner is, right? So you can do a short-term deal knowing that maybe even that second year won't be as good as the first year. So I still think he can play. His game no longer is about speed, no longer about ranging sideline to sideline like Fred Warner, Roquan Smith and company, but still put it off, right? He's a guy that had almost 140 tackles this year for Washington. So he could still do some stuff, right? And he's so helpful with the culture, implementing what Quinn wants, and as kind of that conduit, the leader, et cetera. All the good qualities make him a more valuable piece maybe than the production would be. It's that matter of, at some point, it has to not be Bobby Wagner. That you know what I mean? Like, Old Faithful won't be Old Faithful anymore in however long that is. They got to figure that out. A year, 2 years, 3 years, whatever. You need to have the answer ready. You may not have a ready answer at this point. So you go, you know, we'll put it off until a year or two from now to figure out who our middle linebacker is going to be.
I feel like as long as it's another one-year deal, I'd be hard-pressed to not be willing to do it, right? Like a one-year $6.5 million deal, which is what he signed this year. And with escalators,
he could
have made more than that.
Yeah.
I'm doing that again. I don't know why he would get much of a raise. I mean, if he got 6.5 coming off 180 tackles last season as a first-team All-Pro, and now he made 120 tackles as a second-team All-Pro, and he is a year older, why would he make more than that? So I think there's probably a middle ground here where it makes sense for him, it makes sense for them. And let's not forget, he sought them out.
Yep.
He wanted to play for, in this case, it wasn't Dan Quinn, although I'm sure he wanted to play for Dan Quinn again. He loves Dan Quinn. But the name that came up when he came here was he wanted to play for Ken Norton Jr., you know, the linebackers coach that he was with at one point in time years ago in Seattle. So between KNJ or Dan Quinn, like, he wanted to be with this staff. Now you've got a year of feeling good and everybody feeling themselves and thinking you're going somewhere and the relationship with Daniels. I just have a hard time believing he would not want to stay here and continue with what they started to build, even if it meant taking a little bit less. So maybe instead of six, maybe it's 1 year and five. And now all of a sudden, I mean, you're talking about like no-brainer territory.
Without a doubt. And listen, this isn't gospel, but PFF had Wagner as the 20th best linebacker in football and Luvu the 21st in terms of their overall grades. Now, that's not a great pass defending tandem. That's not really what they do. They're not great in coverage. That neither have had a grade above the 70s in some time. But as a run stuffer, which sounds funny because they struggled so mightily against the run, but it's not Wagner's fault that was the case. It sounds like for the most part, you know, just again, according to some folks that watch it. So you would need maybe somebody else, whether it's a glorified hybrid, you know, a stronger safety to walk down the box to cover more often, or a linebacker that may be undersized that can really run, sort of help you in coverage in that regard, because it's going to get exploited with that tandem as currently exists. But you already had that problem walking in, and you would exacerbate some other things if you let him go. Again, I think you're probably right on in terms of instinctively what it might cost. Even if it's a two-year deal, I think I'd still probably do that, knowing that I won't maybe get great value in that second year, but he's still well worth it to me to be back and happy and engaged.
Bobby Wagner, one of a plethora of significant free agents set to hit the market that the Commanders have to make a tough decision on in the weeks ahead. Now they got to rebuild because of so many one-year deals. This NFC Championship game that they put together, the team that they put together in the offseason, not knowing that that's how it was going to end. But you can't take a step back now when you feel like you're this close. You got to add while keeping as much of the locker room together as possible after the brotherhood that Dan Quinn and Adam Peters established. Mitch Holtis, the voice of the Chiefs, is going to join us in moments here on Media Row, live from New Orleans. You're listening to Grant and Danny. We'll take you up to 6:30 tonight on The Fan.